And my very special guest in this particular segment of this hour, if you're in the world of motorsport, you'll know him. His name is Jono Lester. If you're on the outskirts of motorsport in New Zealand, you're probably going, oh, yeah, I recognise the name. And if you've never really followed motorsport, well, you're about to be schooled, because I've got him here before he shoots back off overseas. Yeah, he's one of those guys. One of those guys who comes back here for the love and weather of New Zealand and then flits himself overseas to go do his career, which is driving race cars around. And good afternoon, Jono Lester. Thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure to be with you, mate. It's been a long time. It's great to chat to you again.
Yeah, it has been a while, and that's really what I want to get down to this afternoon with you, is basically go through the motions of what you've been doing, because let's step right back, okay? Before we get into where you're currently going to be racing for the rest of the season in 2018, let's go back. You've been racing, or you've been at the racetrack since you were born, because your family has lived at racetracks their entire life. And you started racing when you were about 13, and you went through the ranks of New Zealand motorsport. And that's really what we expect to see from people who are into it. We see people going through karting and then through the open wheelers, and then many go into the Toyota Racer series, and then they hop into some tin tops. You did all that, and then you did something different, because we expect New Zealand, or traditionally, we've seen New Zealand stars, New Zealand motorsport stars, go off to Australia, go to America, go to Europe. You didn't do that. You went to Japan.
Yeah, I did.
Now, hang on a second. That's not where New Zealand motorsport people go. But has there been anything when you left New Zealand motorsport, which would have been the last thing you would have probably properly done in here, would have been, what, the Porsche series?
It was actually TRS.
It was actually TRS, okay.
Yeah, back in 2012. And look, the road to Japan, like any driver's career, there's always a story behind it, Sooty. And, you know, my upbringing, as you mentioned, is, you know, three generations of the family, with our heavy involvement down at Manfield, obviously born and raised in Palmy. And I think the fact that I was born into motorsport was part of the reason why I got started late, because I grew up around race cars. I grew up at the racetrack. I was there every day after school, whether I wanted to be or not. And to me, it wasn't the incredibly unreachable or crazy thing that all of my school friends saw it as. You know, I'd sort of say, oh, you know, I'm going to the racetrack this weekend. Dad's running his team down at whatever, down at Manfield or up in Taupo. And I think that was the coolest thing I'd ever heard. And for me, it was kind of just everyday life. So I didn't actually grow up wanting to drive race cars. It's certainly not a, you know, the fairy tale story of someone who jumped on a go-kart at 4 years old. However, when I did get eventually started, it was, I don't think Dad knew what he wanted to get me for my 13th birthday. So he said, look, do you want to ever drive in a race car for a day? And I said, yeah, right. That sounds like a bit of fun, you know. I mean, you wouldn't turn that down, would you?
And, no, not and a 13,
so, yeah. So I actually learned to change gear in one of his Formula Fords, one of his driving school cars, when I was sort of 12, leading up to that birthday. And come 13th birthday, I spent a day in one of Dennis Martin's Sabre Motorsport Formula Vs, which, as anybody who semi-follows motorsport will know, is the kind of proving ground for any driver, no matter where they end up in motorsport professionally. Most of them out of go-karts, or even if they haven't done go-karts like myself, they'll start in Formula V. So, as you can expect, given that I'm still doing it now, after one lap of a proper race car, I was hooked, and, 15 years later, I'm sort of doing what I love, and a passion that developed over time once I'd started driving. Now, to answer your question, how I ended up in Japan, I came up, did a couple of years of Formula V. We pivoted pretty early to GT, and this was seen as a very unusual thing to do. In fact, at first, the Motorsport New Zealand wouldn't even give me a license to race the Porsches when I was 15. But the second time we tried when I was 16, they granted me a special dispensation to do so, because at that time, there were no young drivers in GT. GT wasn't even a thing. Long pain wasn't a thing. You know, the even Le Mans was more about your prototypes and all. It didn't have the following or the professionalism that it did today. I really got to thank my dad for that, because through his lifelong involvement in the sport around the world, he saw an opening there. So we went Porsche racing. We didn't do Formula Ford. We went into the Porsches, and I was this pimply-faced 16-year-old who was jumping into this friggin' supercar, and it was, man, like, couldn't think of anything cooler at that age, you know, and that was the pathway that we chose at a young age, you know, only two and a half years into my driving career. And we made sure throughout that we didn't deviate from that. And I think that's what a lot of people get led into. They led into false senses of security and other avenues, because the supposedly dream deal will pop up in touring cars or an open wheel or whatever. And there'll be some element of that that will be attractive, and they'll jump at it, and they lose track of the main goal. Doesn't mean that the way I've done it has been easy, and it wasn't. It took me 10 years before I did go to Japan of driving, which means 10 years of raising hundreds of thousands of dollars of sponsorship money, knocking on doors, doing all of that. You know, I'm, like most Kiwis, I'm another one who wasn't born with the silver spoon, and I was really fortunate to leverage the network of my family to get started, and then from there it's really been me. It's been me doing what's required to raise up the ranks and hold your own, and then at some point, which was when I went to Japan, turn professional, and then you got to stay there, and that's even harder.
Yeah.
It doesn't let up, man. I thought it would. You know, 2012, I did TRS. I did TRS because the GFC hit. We'd run out of our three-year dream sponsorship deal with Blackwood Spikles here in the Porsches, and they'd pulled back their motorsport involvement. I had nearly 2 years where I didn't have a full-time drive. I did bits and pieces, and as an open-wheel family, historically, Dad said, look, I think we can get TRS together. We can do it on the shoestring, which we did, and which we've done a lot. But we can make it happen. So we borrowed and steal, and I sold my car and did all of that. And we went and did TRS. And the young driver who was my teammate, who we were housing and traveling with and kind of, I guess, billeting, if you like, he was a young Malaysian driver who was backed by Petronas. So they funded him to come here. Dad had already had a long relationship with them, coaching their drivers around the world and running their teams. And at the end of that championship, I got an email out of the blue saying, look, we've got an opening with our GT3 team in Japan. You'd be driving in the Super Taikyu Championship, which is basically their equivalent of the Pertec Enduro Cup below Super GT. So top drivers, a bit of a pro-am element, again, like Pertec. So, you know, high level, but just one rung below the main game, if you like. So I, after doing cartwheels, man, I jumped at it. And I was on a plane to Tokyo for the first time, and what was that, 6 years ago? And after a couple of races there, I realized this place, this is a hidden gem in motorsport. The upper echelon with Super GT, which I finally got to in 2017, last year, is world class, amazing cars, you know, 100,000 people in the grandstands, fanatical fans who follow you like you're their family. It's incredible. And just a racing culture, in a similar to New Zealand, in the sense they've got a rich history with cars and loving motorsport, but with its own unique Japanese flavour. And, mate, I just fell in love with the place. I really did. And so Asia as a whole has been my racing environment for the last 6 years, but Japan is where my heart lies and where I see my long-term future being.
When you stepped into the Porsche when you were 16 years old, if we just jump back to that, as you said, you were, I mean, 16. What did the established people around the traps think of that at the time? Were they like, oh, who's this young whippersnapper? He doesn't belong here. What's he doing in a car with us established race car drivers? What was it like? How did you punch through that?
Well, mate, they thought we were bonking mad. They thought Dad had lost his mind because, you know, his job was to coach young drivers from supercars to Formula One to guys all around the world. That's been where he's made his career once he stepped out of the racing seat. And but we, you know, I mean, you're going to get hate the whole way through. You're not going to enter this game or any sport or any career where you're going to please everyone. And we kept to ourselves. We were confident that we had chosen the right pathway. This is at a time when Formula Ford was at its peak too. And it should still be, in my opinion. It's a fantastic formula. Everyone seems to be in a little bit too much of a hurry these days, Sooty, to get into open wheel and Formula 4 and all of this other nonsense. Mm. Great cars, but, you know, you've got to learn your craft. And Formula 4, Formula V are the place to do that, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we got in, and at this point in time, there was, in the Porsches, there was Beato, there was Matt Halliday, there was Jimmy Richards, there was Fabian Coulthard. So they were the four at the front, and this was before the days of Triple X. So it was all Lyle Williamson, all International Motorsport. And then you had your privateers, of which we were one. So so I came in, obviously, as a kid, and I was in awe of guys like Beato in particular. And it was for a few years after that. Because he was, at that time, the worldwide benchmark in a Porsche. He was and is a legend in those cars. So I learned pretty quickly of his cunning. I remember my first event, man, we sat down at Pocky with a data trace, and I said to Beato, oh, how do I get one of these things off the line? And he goes, oh, mate, what you do is, you keep the thing down low in the revs, about $3,000, and you just hold it there, and then you drive off like a road car. My very first start, I did exactly what he'd told me, and I damn near stalled the thing, and I think I lost 5 or 6 positions off the line, and I thought, right, I won't be asking you for any advice anymore, brother, because it doesn't matter how old I am and where I sit in the pecking order. You know, this is competitive, and that was a lesson learned right on day one.
That is pure gold.
It is, man, yeah. And hey, when the tables turn in 10 years, if I'm still doing this, maybe I'll do the same thing. I don't know. But there's all these young guys coming through now who are even far more developed than we were 10 years ago. And at the end of the day, this is a competitive game. You've got to find your edge. So that's something I've taken through with me right from the start, but that is a nice little anecdote from yeah, early in the days. And I, mate, I loved my time in Porsches. I think it was such a great place to cut my teeth in something that wasn't an open wheeler, because particularly those early 997s and 996, of which I did 1 year in, they were so bloody hard to drive that in many cases, a GC3 car that I drive now, you're only asking half of the, you know, the ability to do the same job. They are a lot easier. Obviously, you have your adjustable aids with some traction control and ABS. And sure, and a lot of times we do run them off or very low now, but nothing is as hard as a Porsche Cup car. And if you can hustle one of them, you can podium, you can pole, you can win races in one of them, you can drive anything. I guess it's kind of like a V8 supercar in that regard. It's a very niche car to drive. And once you can crack that, then you can become a very diverse and adaptable driver. So I'm very fortunate for that.
So you went to Japan with Petronas, and from memory, you started off with them, and you were in one of the Mercedes AMGs. Is that right?
That's right. That was the goal wings. I did 2 years in that car, and we were second in the championship both years. Should have won the second year. And again, how many times has the driver said that?
Ask Craig Lowndes.
Yeah. And it was just one of those seasons where you'd pole most races, but things wouldn't go your way. But a great start in my journey. Obviously started to build a profile in Japan. And then the team folded after 23, I think, years of backing from Petronas with in partnership with Dato David Wong, who funded the other half of the program out of the love of motorsport he had. He was a fantastic guy who unfortunately passed 3 or 4 years ago. He and Petronas basically mutually agreed to end the program after more than two decades, and I was back home. So probably would have been the third time in my career at that point in time where I'd been back to square one, and you've taken one step forward, but it feels like you've taken three back at the same time. So I can't even remember what I did in 2013 now, man. You make me feel old, but it would have been bits and pieces here and there, a bit of testing and bits and pieces. And then I, as you know, because you had an involvement there too, I became involved with the Trass Family Ferrari team. So that was back here in New Zealand, and just a chance meeting at a track day at Hampton Downs. And for the next 12, 18 months, I was driving Ferraris. So we did Australian GT and the Bathurst 12 Hour, which, man, well, you were there. You were filming our documentary. That was such a cool week. And the 458, still to this day, is just puts a smile on my dial more than any other race car I've driven. Although that's about to change, Sooty, because I've got a 488 ride coming up, which is being announced in the next couple of weeks, but we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But the 458 was great. You know, I enjoyed my time. We had some challenges with that team, but we had a very fast car, and we set record after record in Australian GT. You know, we were on pole 5 out of 7 rounds. But we didn't win the championship. So, you know, we didn't get the one that counted. Mm. But we had a great time. And I think for me, it was again, another great time for me to take another step forward in my own development as a driver. But I needed to get back to Asia, because I knew that, as good as Australian GT was at that point in time, you can't make a career in Australia driving anything other than a V8.
Right.
I didn't have a profile there. I still don't. I mean, it's taken guys like Earl Bamber long enough to get a co-driver drive after winning 2 Le Mans, because if you race in Australia in the V8s, then, you know, that's your sort of domain. But you could win. I'd say there'd be Formula One guys who would be turned down for that kind of thing. Not to say that that's where I'm looking anyway, but my point is that, you know, there wasn't a future for me in Australia with GT. So, mm-hmm. So 2016, I drove five different full and part programs throughout Asia. I was in a Porsche Cup car, a Porsche GT3R, a McLaren 650S, a Lamborghini Huracan Trofeo, and a Lamborghini Huracan GT3. So that was full on. It was a great year in the sense that I met some fantastic people, a lot of which I'm still involved with now, and drove in some great championships from Asian Le Mans to new emerging championships in China and all sorts of you know, different cars that were challenging in their own ways. But the beauty of that whole period was that I got back to Japan and I made my debut in Super GT, which was, for me, was the dream.
Right.
I grew up playing Gran Turismo. I won't be the only person listening to this who did that.
Yep.
And there's all those you know, Pennzoil GDRs and Raybrick NSXs, all the top cars on that game that are a million credits. And they are Super GT GT500 cars. And whilst that's not the class in Super GT I was in, I'm in GT300, which is the second category within the field, it was still part of the circus. And it was a dream for me to make that debut. And whilst the race I did, the one-off race at the Suzuka 1000, was a bit of a nightmare insofar as the result, again, I expanded my network. I got talking to Golf Racing, so obviously a brilliant brand with such a rich history in motorsport.
Yep.
And come last year, 2017, I had a contract to race professionally as their lead driver in the full championship. So that was the next step on the ladder, the next rung. And we podiumed our first race, which was insane. The team were new. They were a bunch of Porsche enthusiasts who had really, well, they themselves had no race experience. They obviously were well-heeled personally. They loved Porsches. They owned them. The Porsche Club were our guests at every round. It was one of those kind of family teams.
Right.
We had myself and another professional driver, so the driving was good. We had a good engineer, which is key, and we had a very, very good young group of pit crew, and particularly pit stop crew, who were students at the local automotive college. So they were studying. They'd never worked in motorsport. They were learning in a race team, practically, you know, like doing your bloody early childhood placement at a care centre here. It's the same deal. They were doing pit stops in Super GT, and these are not timed, you know, fake pit stops where you've got a minute to do your job. These are like Formula One, as fast as you can. And so whilst we were one of, I guess, the underdogs, we used what we had to our advantage, and we took the team from being 20-something in the championship their first year to 8th in the championship last year. We had 3 top fives. We had a front row start at Fuji, almost pole. We were within a tenth of pole there. We had a great year, and again, just reinforced my love of racing in Japan. But like all things, they're never as secure as they might be. I had a 2-year contract. And at Christmas time, Gulf Oil International, who obviously oversee the global activities for the team, had informed the team that they were reducing the funding of that program, which then cut the funding that went to hiring me.
So for the second time, a team sponsor disappeared and you lost your drive.
Yeah, man. And this one sucked because it was the night before my birthday.
Oh.
So I remember going around to my dad's and we sunk a bottle of whiskey and we sat there and we said, well, what the hell are we going to do? So jumping on the phone. It's all you can do, man. I mean, this game, like, take everything out of it. If you don't make it happen for yourself, it ain't going to happen. And yeah, there's money is king and all of these other things, but what I've found over, again, 15 years now, is if you've got to put in an 18-hour day, sending out 180 bloody emails and calling people you've never talked to, and selling yourself and finding ways outside the box to get a drive, take a haircut. You know, like I've lost out plenty of times, even in my professional career, to get an opportunity. But we were put back in that situation again, and I was thinking, man, how many more times can this happen? so we came into this year, And I think I was at a 660 concert, man, with some friends. And I got a call from Thailand. Can you come in and test a bunch of GT3 cars for the Thai GT series and set their BOP? So you'll know BOP. Some of the listeners may not. BOP is, in GT racing, is what's called a balance of performance, where there is an equalization process that takes place.
Yep.
So whether you are adding weight, increasing the ride height limits, reducing boost on the turbo cars, whatever is necessary to make fast cars slower or slow cars faster, so that your huge Nissan GT-R, your low slung Lamborghini, and you know your little, well, your other huge BMW M6, let's say, are all within a tenth or two,
right.
And
yep.
It comes back down to the driver. So, yes. Jetted off to Thailand, and I did have an agenda here, as you do. I knew of a team that were well funded, who one of my former engineers had worked with. So I made sure to test that I spent a little bit more time with them than most, helped some of their drivers with some video and some data and a little bit of coaching. And
You made just, sure that you milked your way into their good books.
Yeah, I just played the game. And the lap times helped as well.
Yes.
We went out there in all of their cars and did some really, really strong times.
You ended up with a drive in Thailand.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I had a contract before I'd even touched down home from that 2-day trip, which was great because back on the horse, you know, obviously Super GT, the level is higher, but you're out there racing and you're earning a living, so
that's better than nothing.
Which is and I'm not trying to belittle it at all because the Thai series has actually come a huge way in a long time. I mean, there's Kiwis and Aussies and Europeans and factory drivers and all now in there this year, the same as myself. 25 car field in our GT3 class alone. And like China and other parts of Asia at different times, huge amounts of money being thrown into the sport. So so I'm racing with Vatana Motorsport, who have a large stable of Lamborghinis, and we run the older Lamborghini, the Gallardo, screaming V10, aero. The car's 4 or 5 years old, super powerful, but no aero, so it's sliding around and you're wrestling it, and man, it sounds just horny. It is so cool.
Hey, we're running. I could talk to you for the next 2 hours about this, and people I'm sure could listen. We've only got about 60 seconds left, but. Look,
I can talk as much as you, man,
yes,
so I
know.
Apologize.
The one I would just want to get a quick grab on before we disappear is recently Suzuka 10-hour. Quickly tell us about that.
All right, cool. So back to Japan, actually with the rival team who were our Porsche rivals with Golf last year in Super GT. So D-Station Racing, they're the factory-supported team in Japan. Suzuka 10-hour is coming up at the end of August. I'm hoping we'll be able to get it on air in NZ. I'm trying to do that now. And it's a two-car team, myself leading one car and Earl Bamber leading the other.
Oh, this is big news.
Yeah, so two boys from Manawatu Wanganui, grew up together. I'm very close mates with his younger brother, Will, up in Asia as well. Huge race man, and back to Japan, hopefully, it's my ticket back to Super GT, but I've got to get a result first, so we'll see how the race goes.
And that, see, so there's another agenda there.
Yeah, man, always is.
There always is. Look, listen, it's a shame I've got to let you go to finish off this hour, but look, it has been absolutely brilliant you having you on here and getting a bit of insight in those things. The Porsche story was fantastic. And you're doing something that New Zealand motorsport fans just don't hear about, and that's our drivers. As I said at the beginning, going to Asia. It's so unusual.
But, well, hey, you guys, feel free to follow because it's pretty cool. I'm racing heaps of different cool cars, and, you know, like, it's all online. It's all live streamed, and the more Kiwis that follow, the better, and that gives us a better chance of getting it some more coverage here. And you know, I love the support that I have, but there's always room for more.
Well, I'm sure people can follow you, and it's johnolester.com, and that'll link you link them all to the Instagram and Twitter
and the live streams and all of
that. The you stuff know you do. All right, mate. Jono, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your time.
No problem. Thanks, buddy. See you soon.
Bye-bye.